Welcome to We Are The Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Are The Watchers.
Welcome to We Are The Watchers Game of Thrones special, episode 2, where we talk about episode 2 of Game of Thrones. Tom, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm nervous.
I am so prepared.
There was so much tension.
For all of the deaths.
Ratchet up.
And this is what I think some people who watched the episode and said, oh, nothing happened, it was boring, didn't get.
This was maybe my favourite episode ever. I loved this episode from beginning to end. It was perfect.
Was it because you saw people who, I mean, I guess we saw people who hadn't seen each other for a very long time last episode, but was it because you saw people who hadn't seen each other for a very long time and had a continuation of a conversation?
It was partly the continuation. It was more that people in this episode acted as real people, not as characters. So many shows you watch and they move plot, but they keep secrets from one another because you know that something can't happen for a few episodes. Where we're in the end game and all these people expect to die, and so they were just open and completely honest with one another. It was a beautiful thing.
One thing that resonated with me was when Brienne said, I think we should all go and have a bit of a sleep before the battle. I'm like, even if you lay down,
you're not going to sleep.
There's no way you're going to sleep before you fight the army of the dead.
Yeah.
Come on.
Hang out with the god of, what's he, the god of wine and women? I've forgotten.
Oh my gosh, there was so much greatness about that group that we'll get through. But I thought maybe we'll do this episode, we'll just kind of go through characters and talk about them. So we've already mentioned her, Ser Brienne of Tarth. Best scene for me.
Hands up if you maybe shed a tear.
I had something in my eye and something in the other eye as well.
So I got upset the first time I watched it, and then the second time I watched it, I got proper choked up.
That smile she puts on at the end, that's the bit that got me. I was like,
yep. This is a woman that's put everyone else before her entire life and just accepted her role. Hasn't been happy about it, but it's kind of like, I feel like she learned from Arya.
Yeah.
Of be who your heart drives you to be.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And so she buried it. And she was a knight in everything but title.
Absolutely.
And it was like she was so afraid of rocking the boat or potentially upsetting someone else or putting them in harm's way.
Because she has to do what's right.
That's right. I mean, she could have asked Renly to knight her way back in the day and stuff.
True.
But it clearly had never occurred to her to ask. And I think as well, because she's told that story of when her father was trying to find someone to marry her, that he held the ball and the guys came and they all laughed at her. It almost felt like she had that feeling again of she was around men that she trusted, but she still doesn't trust men, and she thought that they were going to laugh and pull the rug out, and instead you've got Tormund giving a standing ovation.
He was trying so hard with his dragon suckling story. It didn't work.
Okay, we'll come back to Tormund. We'll circle back.
We have to.
Because that's the real reason this is my favourite episode.
But how much did you love that it was Jamie that did it? Okay, because in the lead up to this season coming back on, I've been reading the books. And probably, 6 months ago or something, I read those scenes with Jamie and Brienne that she actually referred back to this episode.
Being rude.
Yeah, she's like, "What? This is weird. Why aren't you being rude to me? Do you want me to insult you?" No. There's always been something special between those two since then, and I love that it's happened and she's a knight and it's and in her allowing Jamie to do it, he has been now recognised by that group as the knight that he is and not the Kingslayer.
Yeah.
There was a lot going on there.
There were so many, and it was him kind of declaring his own independence of, I do have this power. I can make a choice for myself.
You don't need a king or queen for this one.
Well, he's followed Cersei's rule for so long that choosing to break away from her and then choosing to not, and, you know, he's found some self-governance. It's fantastic, I will say. I think my favourite moment of the knighting was when she looked to Pod.
Yeah.
For like that look, he gave that tiny little nod of approval, which wasn't needed at all. But every other man in that room was a man already of power. And she turned to the one man that she's taught power.
Yeah.
And almost like, what do you, you know, I look at you as an equal. what do you say in this situation? And he just like, yes, this is what you deserve.
And he was an equal in that scene.
Yeah.
That whole time. I also enjoyed the fact that we saw her even to the last second before they ended up in that room. She was still training him. She was still teaching him.
Oh, and she still expects to continue training him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shame that we'll more than likely be saying goodbye to her and Podrick next episode.
Yeah. Podrick, what a song.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. A song that's in the books.
Yes, and of quite a bit of significance.
Absolutely.
Lays out a lot of theories.
For John and Daenerys and a few other things.
I will say, I half, like, at the beginning of that scene, when they were all starting to get a bit drunk and get lively, I thought we were going to see some sort of weird orgy happen. Because every character in that room, apart from Brienne, has been highly sexualized at some point.
Yeah.
Jaime.
Yes.
With Cersei. You've got Tyrion.
Tyrion, hello.
The whoremonger.
Yeah.
Pod, who got dropped off at a brothel back in the day and the women complained he was too good. Tormund, who suckled at a giant woman's breast for 3 months.
What a story.
And Sir Davos, who you know would just stand in the corner and pull weird meme lord faces at the camera like, oh, that's not supposed to go there.
He's got eyebrows for that.
Yeah, I honestly thought that's where that was going. Like Tormund was just going to stand up and, who else want fuck? Can we talk about him? Is now the time?
Let's talk about him.
So from the moment he hugged John,
yes,
gave him that giant bear hug, and then turned basically to camera and said, is the big woman here? I knew we were in for good times.
That was probably my favorite line in the whole thing.
I think so.
Is there a big woman here?
Just priorities.
Exactly.
Okay? Danny's focused on the throne, but Tormund knows what he wants to climb.
And the look on her face was like, oh.
The way he dragged that chair in front of the fireplace, in front of Davos, to sit down and maintain her eyeline.
That we were just cracking up. Pretty much everything he said, every single line he had, we were laughing.
He has become the MVP of this show, I reckon.
Absolutely.
Of just a guy we would not normally have, an actor that, you know, from a European country that probably wouldn't cross over.
No.
And instead we've been gifted with this wonderful, pure-hearted beast of a terrible person.
Do you know what I think? I think he's going to survive the whole show now.
I kind of think so.
He's too special.
He's become a bit of a beacon.
He doesn't have a storyline arc that needs to have some ending like Brienne.
No.
Or like Theon. Or like Grey Worm. Like, it's...
There's no redemption or anything needed for
him. It's just him at the end.
Mm-hmm. He just wants to get out there and pound...
And
bad
man,
guys.
He's going to.
Yeah. The drink, that is a power move. I don't know what he was trying to achieve with it. That's the thing. Like, he was pulling a dick power move, but to whose benefit? Is he impressing Brent? Is he trying to show up Jaime? Or is he just like,
both.
Hey, men, this is how you drink. Not out of pissy cups.
Out of a horn. Let it drip through my beard in a cascade like a waterfall.
And that story, like,
story was phenomenal.
What a perfect way to get one's name.
It was just, it's left me speechless like it left all of them.
Do you think?
Yes.
I wondered this instantly. So this happened when he was 10, right?
Yeah,
that story.
Yeah.
Did he have a different name before then? Was he like Tormund Jones?
Yeah, he might have been. Tormund Wildling.
Yeah. Just nothing, but instead, kill a giant.
He has made that character so much better than that character ever was in the books.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so many levels above.
I feel like
crowd favorite.
He must choose a lot of the direction it must go with him because he'll get the lines and they must... He said before that he has thrown in a lot more of the looks towards Brienne. He's added them himself and stuff like that. So they must just keep writing more and more, and he must have a field day.
And they obviously trust him. They're like, just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just go for it.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Now, we saw the brothers, the Lannister brothers.
Yes.
Together.
At Winterfell. Prepared to die. What would their father think?
Oh, if only he was there. He might pop up later, though.
He's in a crypt somewhere.
Yeah.
He'd be in King's Landing. That's where he got shot.
Would they have taken him to Castle Rock? I don't know. I can't remember.
Maybe they left him on the ship.
Don't go in there. Why? It's a bit whiffy. Mm. Oh, okay. So Tyrion, among other characters, spent most of it saying, well, this is our last night alive.
Yep.
We're all going to die. A whole lot of people are saying that. Do you think Jaime has had his redemption? Is this Jaime's last episode alive as well? Because we're predicting Brienne's going in the Winterfell battle.
I think
Jaime is going to fight alongside her.
Yes.
Well, behind her, actually. He's like, I want you to be in charge of this.
I think Jaime has to make a heroic sacrifice. There has to be some element, that final thing. I thought it was going to be over Bran, but instead it's going to be Theon. Theon has to have he stole Winterfell from Bran when Bran was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, to get his final redemption, this has to be where he goes.
Makes sense.
So I think Jaime has had his redemption with Brienne of how he treated her, and there's that flipped mechanic. But I just can't see his story with Cersei being done unless it's something to do with the baby.
Or his storyline finishes through Tyrion.
Sure.
What if he saves Tyrion and then Tyrion finishes his Jaime's story with Cersei?
Sure.
It could work.
I see Tyrion making a heroic sacrifice for Dany.
To prove that he is worth the hand.
Yes.
Role.
Whether he dies from that heroic, I think there has to be, they've set him up these last few episodes of she doubts him so much that he has to redeem himself. And maybe that's that shot we see at the end of the trailer of him up on the battlements.
Yep.
Maybe he's talked with Bran and gotten some different plan.
Yes, because we saw that, the beginning of that conversation with him and Bran, and he sat down and he said, well, won't you tell me the story?
They made a point so many, like even Ser Jorah saying that this is a man who learns from his mistakes and listens.
Yeah.
They've clearly, he's learning something from Bran that's going to be vital to this thing and whether or not he survives.
Look, this is going to lead on into something else and I suspect we're okay with that. Tyrion was told several times, in fact, was told by Daenerys, you're too important, you need to go into the crypts.
Yes.
At the end of the episode, and like you said, the trailer, he's not in the crypts when the dead are arriving. He's going to fight.
Yep.
This makes me worried about the crypts.
I agree. They said the phrase, the crypts are safe. Everyone head down the crypts. Go where all the dead bodies are. That makes the most sense.
Yep, yep.
When you're going to fight someone who raises the dead. So there's one shot in an earlier trailer for the season where Arya looks like she's in the crypts.
Yes, running. Yes.
Like in terror.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think we spoke about a certain someone last week that has never appeared on the show but was in the books.
Mm.
Do we know where Catelyn Stark's body ended up? Because Ned's bones were given to her by Littlefinger and we presume that she took them back to the crypt.
I also presume Ned's bones are probably not in a condition where he can fight.
Yeah. We didn't see her head come off. Like, it's the same with Robb Stark. We didn't see, we know his head came off.
Mm.
And we don't know if the whites can be reanimated when they're that broken.
We don't know that, but what an amazingly stressful surprise the audience would get if that was the case.
Agreed.
If they reanimated with no head and they're all Starks of, season one to whatever, would Lady Stoneheart have this little fan moment? Can you imagine fans of the books if Lady Stoneheart arrives and we're all like, oh, this is amazing, she's here, this is going to... And then she just starts killing everybody in
That's
the crypt.
That's what I think.
I don't think she's going to be anywhere near as good or have any thought process of her own.
No.
She's just going
to
go.
I think they may have just saved her to be a zombie and to rip up people and kill some people we care about.
I don't want to say goodbye to her because I was sure as of last week that she was going to be a key to finding out a secret, but I think we're not going to be seeing Gilly after this.
Yeah, agreed. Gone.
Pretty upsetting.
Bran's plan to that he's got to save himself is very clever, but the other part of the plan to ensure humanity is not just memories, it's also children. And if all the children are in one spot around dead bodies and they all get done for, then who continues things on in the future?
I'm not sure I'm down with Bran's plan.
I think Bran hasn't told part of the plan. I think Bran needs to try and spear or stab the Night King onto the tree.
The werewood?
Yeah.
Because
that's how he was formed.
Oh.
If he can try and reenact that process, maybe that frees the Night King. Because if it was done by the Children of the Forest in order to fight against the First Man, if one of the First Man reverses that, perhaps that undoes everything.
Got a theory about that.
Okay, go.
On how, 'cause I think it's going to tie in with what you're saying. Theon's now going to hang out next to the Weirwood Forest, or the Weirwood Tree, I should say, with Bran, and wait for the Night King to arrive and then do a heroic death. What if he hides up in the tree, like in the branches, and then Night King comes along staring at Bran, Bran staring back, like they're both very good starers. Mm. So you can imagine 100% of their attention would be on each other. And then Theon comes jumping down from the branches, pushes the Night King up against the trunk of the tree and does the dragon glass thing.
Yeah.
Somehow he dies. I don't know, maybe the Night King stabs him or kills him whilst that is happening. Night King is dead, but the White Walkers live on, and they're all like, holy cow.
100% agree.
Now what do we do?
Yes, I don't know if this – it doesn't look like this is vampire rules. If you take out the head, it takes out all of them. Because that's the thing with – that's why Helsing wanted to kill – Dracula is because if you kill the head vampire, all go.
Mm.
I don't think that's going to work here.
And do you know why I don't think it's going to work? Because Bran said that's how it's going to work. Or somebody said that's how it's going to work. We take him out, we're all good.
It's too easy.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
When you say Theon jumps out of the tree
and
lands on him.
Pushes him up against.
Does he land like spread-legged on? Because you remember he used that as a move in a fight last season.
Yes, he kept
getting kneed and was like, huh, nothing. Can he use his eunuch patch? That's what I'm TMing right now, eunuch patch.
I love it.
As a further weapon.
Yes.
He's, you know, those knobbly bits on the Night King's head, not going to bother him.
It's not going to bother at all.
No.
What if Varys is up there as well?
Ah! Oh, a double...
Eunuch power.
Double no tea bag.
Yeah. You can see their faces. You can see the whole cast's faces when they realise... Night King's dead.
Didn't work.
Now what the hell do they do?
Because the three episodes after, it either has to be that we finish the Night King this episode, like episode three, and then we have three episodes to do with Cersei.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's been a very... We didn't check in on Cersei at all this episode.
There was no King's Landing.
So I feel like we either get the three episodes in Winterfell and then three episodes about King's Landing, and it's almost like... We realise that Cersei is the final boss, not the Night King.
Mm.
Or Winterfell is not going to go well. Very few will be left and the army just rolls on through.
Mm. And then Cersei has to deal with them.
Yep.
Bye-bye, Grey Worm.
I'm not sure. I mentioned this before the show to you. Of if I can see them doing a swerve and giving a happy ending to anyone, it's those two. Just because they're not main characters, it'd be a very easy thing to do.
Mm.
We're now waiting for them to die because something was said.
I've been waiting for Grey Worm to die since the beginning.
Sure. But I don't know. I think there's going to be a couple of swerves and I could see that being a swerve.
Mm.
I'm wrong. He's going to die horribly. They're all going to die horribly.
Do you think she will? Do you think Missandei will?
Yeah, because she's in the crypts.
Oh... Forgot about that. Yeah. Oh, well.
I don't feel good for her.
I don't feel good at all. It's a shame because she's like the C-3PO of the show. She's super handy.
She's gotten a lot handier and he's gotten less C-3PO.
Yeah, he has.
Actually, I'll go. He was more IG-88, which was one of the mercenary droids or bounty hunters.
Yep.
And he's chilled out a bit.
He's had a chill. All right. Well, we may or may not say goodbye to them, but probably will. Sandra and Danny's chat.
A lot of hand touching.
So much hand touching. What I loved is that I thought at that point in time in that scene, she was gearing up and working it up to ask Sansa if she would be her hand.
Sure.
If Tyrion doesn't survive, that plan could go through. If Tyrion does survive, that plan is not needed. But then where is Sansa? After this episode, Sansa's story is still out in the open. We're not sure exactly of a direction.
So are Sansa and Tyrion still married?
Yes.
So
neither of them have actually said to anybody that, oh, yeah, we actually still are.
Yeah, but they didn't consummate it.
No, they didn't.
So maybe it's not an official thing.
Ah, right.
But the reason why I ask is because I'm trying to remember back, but was there anything around Catelyn being an intermediary hand while a new one was found after Ned died. Not really because she was in trouble, but if something were to happen to Tyrion, theoretically the power could pass to Sansa.
Hmm.
Or in a cool world, they both survive and she appoints them both hand or a council of hands, because that would make a lot more sense.
It would. Yeah, you can't just have one person dictating.
That's right. Don't let one person get corrupt. Let a whole bunch of people get corrupt.
Yeah, that's right. That's okay. Right. I also like the fact that Sansa's like, no.
So, oh, we can be friends.
But I'm going to take the north.
Yeah, you've got your priority and I've got mine.
I want to take over this part of the world where there's going to be nobody. Easy to maintain in terms of governing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm interested to see where Sansa's storyline is going. I feel like she's not going to die because there's no ending in her actual story arc.
I don't see it being an issue.
Really?
Ah, Danny.
If she dies, then it's fine?
No, if Danny dies,
yeah,
Mad Queen's coming on.
Yeah.
She is simmering to boil.
Yeah. There's a little flicker in her eyelids.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, well, we'll get to the end scene. We'll get to the discussion in a minute. But yeah, with that information shared now, she's going to fray at the edges. And she made it very clear what her priority is. Like, yeah, she's here to help out and save. She says, you know, John, I've come around to what John wants to do, but not really.
But I'm still the queen.
Yeah, I'm the queen and I'm only doing this as a step to my final thing. Whereas everyone else in Winterfell right now is kind of like, this is it.
Yeah, we I had this, plans, but die. Now I'm going to have to deal with this.
Yeah, she's like, this is just liberating more slaves. It's just another item on her checklist, you know?
Yeah.
I don't see that being good. And her, you know, I think Sansa's going to go into this battle with the right mindset.
Oh, absolutely.
But Jon, Danny.
Yeah, they're sidetracked, you could say.
Yeah.
Sidetracked a little bit. That conversation was swiftly interrupted, so we don't know where it could have gone or it will go. But speaking of John, I think the most important part of anything John was a part of this episode was he was standing having a chat and just off to one side was Ghost. I was like, no one
acknowledged?
Literally no one acknowledged the direwolf that has not been in any seasons for, what, how many, two? Two and a half? Like it's just...
Maybe a season and a half, something like that.
It's just not, and just standing there.
Yep, no reference. Didn't look quite as big as usual.
No.
But, you know, they saved the budget for the dragons. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. This episode was probably a little bit cheaper than last episode.
This was the most bottle episode they've ever done. And I love a good bottle episode.
Yeah.
You know, lock them in one room and just make it about character.
It was captivating.
Yeah.
And it just drives the tension up for next week.
I have a question.
Yes.
As a younger woman, do you think seeing someone slam a dragon glass axe into the ground really hard? Do you think that's what makes you go, that guy's cashing in my V card? That's what's happening here.
She'd made that decision earlier.
Oh, she had. She'd known that for a while.
How good was it, though? She's like, we're doing this now. He's like, oh, I don't know. Nah, we're doing it.
I think almost everyone I've spoken to, almost everyone I've read was cheering her on and enjoying that scene until the second she took her kid off. And I was like, oh, I don't want this.
Oh, she's too... Oh, I can't look at her. I remember her as a kid.
I've known her since she was 11. Ah.
I'm not the red woman. Take your bloody pants off. That was a great line.
Yep.
They definitely showed more of her than I thought they would.
Mm.
But good on both of them. There'll be the true love story. That is the Baratheon and the Stark name, well, lineage being passed down.
Yep. I'm pretty sure we saw more of Gendry back when he was on Skins. I reckon
he was on Skins.
Yeah, he was the super hyper kid that everyone loved who, I won't say what happened to him, but yeah. Yeah, he got his kid off on that all the time.
Wasn't Gilly in that as well?
She was.
To be a reunion it of is, sorts.
If you've not seen Skins before and you're under the age of, I'll say 35, 40, enjoy it. If you are older than that, don't bother. Those children will just make you cranky. You didn't live that period.
They will annoy you.
Oh, so much.
I enjoyed it though at the time.
I loved the first two seasons and then the third, they did the two-season block arcs. I loved the first two arcs, and then the third one I was too old for, and I just wanted to shake my fist at these progressive children.
Yeah, the third one, I think I watched the first episode and went,
I don't want to hear about Freddy. Was it Freddy?
I'm just over this now.
Let her go. Yeah, anyway.
I'm just totally over it. Anybody else you want to have a chat about before we go on? Oh, I should just say that I did enjoy the Hound again. Oh. How did he like to spend his last night on Earth? Just sitting out in the cold.
Drinking some sort of piss from a bag.
That's right. It was beautiful. And that's all we needed to see of him for this episode, I think.
Look, I think...
he's already had his arc.
He has had his arc. And I think seeing him in a moment of self-reflection is enough movement on his arc.
Yeah.
Because that was something he clearly didn't do in the past.
Never did it.
Yeah. There was a great meeting of two people that we haven't seen meet on screen that I was hoping for to close out the Mormont story.
Oh, yes.
Lyanna and Jorah. It was such a quick little scene, but that's all it needed.
All it needed.
And she showed how powerful she was, and he showed how much respect he had for her. That was, awesome.
Oh, look, also we can probably tick off now why we saw him with Sam's family's sword. Mm. Was it Claw? Death Claw? The sword. The Tali sword. I've forgotten what it's called right now. It's off the top of my head. I know you're screaming at the podcast now. I'm sorry, but now I understand how he got it. I thought I think it was the first or second trailer. Why has he got that? Does that mean Sam's dead? But Sam will still be fighting.
Yeah, we'll see what Sam gets up to.
Sam gets up to a lot of things. I actually have more faith in Sam than most of the characters on the show do.
I agree. He'll do the right thing, but I'm very worried about if he hears something's happening in the crypts. Will he leave his post?
Because he's not got any Valyrian steel now.
No.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
So I watched something this week that was Game of Thrones related, but not Game of Thrones itself.
Hang on, what was it?
So, you know, I love that show, Star Talk, with your personal astrophysicist, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
It's a great show, that's why.
This week's was with George R. R. Martin, and they had normally they have one expert in a scientific field and a comedian, and this time they had a host of different scientific experts in different fields, and they were breaking down different parts of Game of Thrones. And one was with a paleontologist talking about why dragons are so prevalent across different cultures. And he was explaining that before we knew dinosaurs were a thing, fossils would be found. And, you know, there was one, I think it was in Greece or somewhere, where they believe that, well, they know there used to be like pygmy elephants, tiny elephants.
Yeah.
And one of they found these skulls, and where the trunk would be, they have these giant cavities in the middle of the head that look exactly like what a cyclops is imagined to be.
Yeah, right.
So there's all these theories about where this stuff has come from. And there's a certain dinosaur that they believe the fossils, when discovered, would be the inspiration for the griffin.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right.
So they talk plenty about that. But what George R. R. Martin really wanted to focus on was the work he put into the physiology on the dragons, and explaining that technically the dragons on the show are wyverns, because they are not four-legged dragons with wings. They are two-legged dragons.
And they use their those clawy bits in the middle of their wing.
So his dragons are actually very anatomically correct.
They're almost like bats, sort of.
Exactly. They have the same wing mechanisms as bats or as pteranodons, pterosaurs, dinosaur-ish flying creatures.
Yep, yep.
Of where those front arms have evolved membranes, you know, length very, very light and difficult to lift off. So there was one really interesting about that was the science side. Then there was talking about how there was a medieval history expert.
Oh, cool.
Talking about where the line between dark and Middle Ages is, and how reflective the show is actually of elements of the Middle Ages and stuff. And that was...
yeah, that sounds super interesting.
It was pretty interesting. Yeah. A lot of the stuff that seems fanciful on the show and backstabbery is pulled from moments in history.
Amazing.
And similarly, George R. R. Martin talks about how the wall is based on Hadrian's Wall, because he'd taken a trip there and stood. And even though it was only 10 feet high, looking out, you could imagine at that time, Hadrian's Wall, that was considered the end of the world. And looking out past there, who imagines what could come down there? Wild Scottish.
Tormunds.
And exactly. And so it gave him this idea. And then for fantasy, you ratchet that up to 11. So all of a sudden it's 700 feet tall, covered in ice. But he talked about how all these elements that seem really ridiculous and far-fetched in the book are all based on research he did of actual things, and then put them in a low fantasy setting.
Do you think that's why, as a reader or as a watcher of the TV show, yes, there are obviously fantasy elements. And whenever you talk to someone who hasn't watched Game of Thrones, they go, but it's got dragons in it. You're like, oh, get over it. It's based enough, like you said, in history, in science, in what we know humans and the world can be like, that we accept it.
Yes.
And that's why we enjoy the story so much.
Very much so. Look, a lot of fantasy is considered high fantasy, and that's where you have a wizard who can do anything. They are a deus ex machina. They come in and save the day at the end of the story. Whereas he says that he very much looked at Lord of the Rings as the basis for this, which is considered low fantasy because Gandalf in that is a powerful wizard, but when there is trouble, he pulls his sword out. He doesn't fix everything with waving his fingers and saying a few magic words. There are real world consequences for every action.
Yeah.
And that's what he based this very much on. You have characters like your Melisandre the Red Witch, who's got to be coming back soon.
Oh, she, I think we'll see her in episode 4.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know, there are characters who have magical elements to them. There are far-fetched, fanciful creatures. Mm. But the humans that we deal with are dealing with human problems in a human way. And they don't have some magic twiddle of fingers and words to disappear situations. And I think that makes it very relatable.
Mm. Everything is saying you can refer straight to Game of Thrones. You're like, yep, yep. Like it's ticking the boxes.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. So that episode is out on iTunes?
Yes, that aired late last week.
And I want to watch it.
It was really strong. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, they jumped around and talked about, there's a lot in there about zombies.
Cool.
But not...
You know I'm happy about that.
Oh, I know, but not zombies in today sense, zombies of bites transmitting virus, but more about, like they purely have a discussion about reanimation. And so it discussed a lot of Frankenstein and electricity, and you know Frankenstein was inspired by experiments that were run on dead frogs of attempting to reanimate frogs.
Yeah, right.
And that's where the idea for Frankenstein came from. And he goes into that and how he used that as his basis for the whites. They're not using electricity, but he is reanimating them in a similar way.
Mm.
So it does make me think that there is a direct control by the White Walkers, but whether that's all funneled up to the Night King or not.
It could just be Craster's sons.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them. We saw them at the end.
There's a reason why, like, bees have a hive mind of one particular leader, and that's really strong for their society because they're insular and that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
But nomadic people, you've always got roles, and that hive mentality or whatever is shared across various people. And I feel that that's, they're going to find that out the hard way.
Yeah, the really, really hard way.
But yeah, Star Talk, Neil deGrasse Tyson, George R. R. Martin, give it a crack. It was good. It was really good.
It's the kind of episode that you're going to want to watch a couple of times, I think, just to get some stuff out. Now we usually do a quiz at the end of every normal Watchers episode.
Yes.
And we didn't do one for the Game of Thrones one because we were Game of Thrones-ing.
So much.
But we had a listener send through an email, thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com, with a whole heap of questions.
Oh.
Now, I obviously can't take part in this, Tom, because I'm sitting here with the questions.
Sure, okay. You put me on the spot.
These are from Fran, so thank you so much, Fran, for sending them in. And if you have any Game of Thrones questions, comments, anything, thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Mm.
Or a raven for you, yeah?
Yep. My arm is already outstretched.
You're ready for action.
Yep.
All right, we'll do maybe... Let's do 5 this episode.
All right.
Because there are a lot. Who was the first character to say the phrase Game of Thrones?
Tyrion?
Oh, you're so close.
Tywin.
Think female.
Cersei.
Yeah, it was Cersei.
I knew it had to be a Lannister because they're the ones focused on winning.
It was 100% in the book. I remember her saying it, and I was like, ah.
Yeah.
She's the...
Danny's focused on ruling.
Yeah.
They're focused on playing the game.
The game's the bit.
Okay.
Yep. A little side note, but I also... was thinking about this last night. I think the Lannisters are the most intelligent family.
Oh, 100%.
More clever than the Starks. Starks got played for a while. All right, second question. In which region, I should say, is Harrenhal? That huge freaking castle. Mm.
Is it down... Is it near King's Landing? Am I remembering that
right? I think
right?
It's kind of near King's Landing, but a little further... North.
Yeah. On the coast.
Yeah.
I can't remember what region that is.
It's called the Riverlands.
Oh, there you go. Mm.
So it was around that time that Robb Stark was still around.
Yes.
So, and he was sort of hanging out there for a bit. According to Littlefinger, chaos is... Do you want multiple choice?
Sure.
Chaos is pit, gift, climb, or ladder?
Ladder.
Yeah. Littlefinger.
I knew it was something about reaching. I couldn't... Yeah.
That was good. Yeah. What's the Lannisters' motto? Not their saying, their motto.
Because their saying is Lannister always pays the debts.
That's right. I'll give you a clue. It's pretty lame. Okay, I'm gonna quote a song, and then you say the second part of the line. I am woman. Hear me
roar.
Exactly. Seems a bit lame, isn't it?
Makes sense for the lion.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Final one. Who's the Onion Knight?
Sir Davos.
Yes. Mr. Davos himself, Mr. Seaworth. Great questions. Thank you so much, Fran.
Thanks, Fran the super fan.
We will be doing more of those in the following episodes. But as for now, I think we're going to go away, have a think about it. I think you indicated you watched it twice.
Oh, no, I watched bits and pieces for review purposes.
I might have another watch of this again. It's always good to watch it in the lead up to the next one, particularly the one that's about to happen. Episode 3 as well is the longest episode of this season. So,
and it's also the longest cinematic battle ever recorded.
Winterfell.
Yes,
Winterfell.
Of any cinematic thing ever.
Ooh, like okay.
300 or actual war movies. This is longer.
Bigger than Ben-Hur, literally.
Yep.
If you are prone to biting your fingernails, maybe wear gloves.
My nails are already gone. I all went yesterday because the last 20 minutes of that, I was like, oh, shit, the horn's going to go while they're having sex. Oh, shit, the horn's going to go while they're knighting it. Oh, shit.
Yep. Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you.